My guest at this time is Dr. Tim Ball. He's a former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg, and he's the author of the brand new book, The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. In the first part of our conversation, which you can find on this very website, we examine the historic roots of the climate change movement, how the modern-day incarnation of that movement got formed and was able to carry a tremendous amount of influence over the general public as well as the scientific community. Here in the second part of that conversation, we'll talk with Dr. Ball about what it's like to be targeted by those in authority, scientifically and politically, for daring to disagree with the conventional wisdom on climate change science, and what historic and current science suggests we are experiencing in our climate and will in the years to come. But we begin by discussing how difficult it has been for Dr. Ball and his allies in this debate to get any sort of credence and airtime to confront what's being presented as settled science.
It made the argument, the counter-argument, almost impossible, because one of the things that they started with is that they defeated the scientific method. Scientists create hypotheses, and the anthropogenic global warming hypothesis, as it became called, was that humans are producing more CO2. If you increase CO2 in the atmosphere, the temperature will go up, and therefore we can predict global warming, runaway global warming, because humans are going to keep expanding their industries. And not what would normally happen with a hypothesis is other scientists would challenge that. And those other scientists would challenge it as skeptics, because all scientists are skeptics, or should be. But what did they do? Immediately, somebody like me or Richard Lindzen said, hang on a minute, we were identified as global warming skeptics, because they knew that the word skeptic had a different meaning for the public than it has in science. And so they were marginalized. Richard Lindzen, by the way, some 30 years ago said, look, the consensus was reached before the science had even begun. And that's exactly what's happened. And so we were marginalized in blocking the scientific method. And then, of course, we were marginalized because of public relations attacks on who was funding us and who, what our agenda was and so on. And because there were not a great many of us, and I've got to tell you, there were an awful lot of scientists that I know that simply, look, I had scientists even say to me, look, I'm a socialist. They're talking about Canadian scientists particularly. Said, I'm a socialist, and if I say I agree with you, then I'm immediately branded a conservative. And I don't want that to happen to me. I've also had a lot of scientists say, look, I've watched what you've gone through with lawsuits and everything else. I'm keeping my mouth shut. I'm not going to say anything. And so the intimidation factor has just been absolutely tremendous. But gradually, of course, more and more people are starting to look at what they've said, what they've done. And this is why I delayed on the book, because I think enough people are starting to ask questions now, and the book is explaining what they did, how they did it, and then, more important, the motive, why they did it, which we've already talked about, that is to eliminate industry and industrialized nations.
This might just be hazarding a guess on your part, Dr. Ball. We keep hearing that 97, roughly, percent of scientists agree that human activity is causing climate change and we're headed towards some sort of calamity if we don't change course. What do you think the real number is if you factor in folks who don't feel like speaking out, like you just mentioned, and folks who maybe just don't get the type of attention that those do on the other side? What's the real breakdown?
Well, I think it's impossible to know what the real breakdown is because, of course, I'm not in favor of these surveys and consensus. And the consensus argument, as soon as they started using that, that proved to me that it was political, because consensus has no place in science. As Einstein said, I can have 100 things that prove me right and only one thing prove me wrong, and that's the end of it. So as soon as they started pushing the consensus argument, I knew this was not about science. So it really is irrelevant to talk about consensus as it relates to science. Now, consensus, of course, in politics is important. The majority of people agree with you, and of course, in politics, as we know, it doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong. As long as you got the majority behind you, you got a lot of power. But that's not the way science works. And as I've said all along, consensus is not a scientific fact. But my guess is right now it's probably about 40 to 50% of scientists are starting to realize that there's something seriously wrong with the science that's being presented.
Two quick questions before we let you go, Dr. Ball. A lot of this book, in addition to explaining the title, how there was deliberate corruption of climate science, you also spend quite a bit of time explaining scientifically why they're wrong. Briefly, in layman's terms, explain what you hope folks get out of that section of the book.
Well, of course, if you're going to say that what you're saying is wrong, then you're almost obliged to say, well, what is the answer? What's causing the climate change, the natural climate change? And of course, the IPCC have narrowed it down where they're saying in their latest report, we're 95% plus certain that it's human CO2 that's caused all of the temperature change since 1950. The reality is that the major cause of climate change is the sun. Now, they pretend to eliminate the sun, but they only look at one portion of the sun. That is what's called the electromagnetic radiation. There are many changes in the sun that cause climate change, such as the changing orbit, changing tilt, and then also the effect of the sun's magnetic field upon cosmic radiation coming into the Earth, which then creates low cloud, which of course affects temperature. None of that is included in their IPCC reports. And so I think it's important that if you're going to say they're wrong, then you have to provide an explanation that covers what they're doing or what they're ignoring. That's why I provided that. It's the same thing, by the way, that if you create a hypothesis and then your research shows that it's wrong, then you've got to accept what scientists call the null hypothesis. So if you say, well, look, no, we dug into it and we found CO2 wasn't causing temperature change, then we have to consider the opposite, the alternative. And, of course, the IPCC have deliberately not done that.
Last question, Dr. Ball, I want to go back to a point you were making earlier, and this is more on the personal side, and that's how people like you who have voiced your skepticism have been treated by the scientific community, by the media, by the political establishment, both in your country, which is Canada, and the United States. What's it like to be on the receiving end of that when you don't have a lot of other allies who are willing to go public?
I've often thought that if I had to do it again, I wouldn't do it. And until you've gone through it, until you have experienced, as some people like are happening in the U.S. with the IRS attacking them, you cannot relate to other people exactly what it's like. When you are sitting in your little condo and you spend all of your savings on legal fees and a knock on the door at 4 o'clock on a Friday and your wife starts crying because she's afraid it's the sheriff delivering another legal summons, people have no idea what that's like. I'm not sure that I would do it again. I mean, I'm almost at the point where if the world wants to be fooled, let it be fooled. I'm not going to fight for it again. So it is extremely difficult. Now, that's not to say that everybody challenges everything is right. But if you're going, as Voltaire said years ago, it's not wise to challenge those people in power. Very dangerous to challenge people in power. And, of course, Voltaire knew all about that because that's what he was doing. By the way, I mentioned earlier, that's why a lot of scientists said to me, you know, we're not prepared to go through what you've gone through. And I sort of sympathize with that. But like Edmund Burke said, you know, evil triumphs when good people stand idly by. That's really the challenge in an open democracy like you have in the United States with free speech.
Dr. Ball, unfortunately, we'll have to call time there. We certainly look forward to our future conversations about issues that are covered in the book as well as they arise in the climate debate in general. Sir, thank you very much. Congratulations on your book, and thanks again for the time today.
Well, thank you, Greg, and thanks for being one person that dared to air both sides of the issue. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Dr. Tim Ball, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. His book is The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.